The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business, individual, anyone, or anything. Welcome to A Little Bit Culty, a podcast about what happens when something that seems like a great thing at first goes to the dark side and takes you with it. I'm your host, Sarah Edmondson.
And I'm also your host, Anthony Ames, aka Nippy. Sarah and I met, fell in love in a quote, self-help organization that turned out to be a mega cult called Nexium. Heard of it? We got out of there together, and on our way out, we helped shut it down. Our journey as Nexium whistleblowers was captured in detail on a docuseries called The Vow on HBO, and also on the front page of a newspaper.
New York Times, babe.
Right.
Have you heard of it? Each week on A Little Bit Culty, we talk with other former cult members and whistleblowers, plus experts in things like cultic abuse and coercive control.
We also turn the mic over to advocates and clinicians with wisdom to share on recovering from everything from MLMs and toxic religion to bad romances with raging narcissists.
There's always something to learn about the cultiverse. Be sure to subscribe to A Little Bit Culty so you don't miss an episode. Find us on Instagram and at alittlebitculty.com. Aloha.
Aloha means goodbye.
I thought it meant hello too.
It does mean goodbye too, doesn't it?
So we were in Hawaii for 10 days and this is the extent of the knowledge that Nippy and I acquired. And well, first of all, it's great to be back, but it was so good to take a proper vacation, right?
Oh yeah. I found the Civic Center with the basketball court, one of the nicest basketball courts in Maui. It's where the basketball teams practice for the Maui Invitational.
I love that we were in Hawaii for 10 days and the basketball court was the highlight.
I had to find it. Troy did his drills. He was popping his jumper. It was really great. He actually beat me in a game of Round the Horn for the first time ever.
I just liked being on the beach and I want to make it known that when we were in Nexium, the line was, why would you take a vacation? Why would you vacate from your life? And it was like totally looked down upon to take a break. And my mom has been trying to take us to Hawaii for a long time. And then of course, everything got pushed because of COVID. So as soon as we were able to fly, she booked this trip. Big shout out to my mom.
Yeah, big shout out to Sarah's mom.
So supportive of our healing process and taking a little break. Anyway, we're back. Before we introduce our guest, just a couple housekeeping things. We've been so blown away, again, from all of the support that we've gotten from our listeners. We still have not decided on a name. We've got some options, a list, a growing list that maybe we can go over in our Ask Me Anything episode, which is coming up soon.
We've gotten a couple in our inbox.
Yes. I really want to do a shout out particular to a woman named Hannah Orbach, who actually sent us $1,000. And I don't know if I can express in words what this means to us. Well, I can. It allows us to produce two more episodes.
Yeah. It helps us so much.
It blows us away. And also allows us to hire more people to help us, you know, do more with this content. We're growing our social media team. We're on TikTok now. So follow us there. I'm also on TikTok, although I've posted nothing because I don't know.
Four followers,
what to say.
Sarah.
I've got four followers, but I haven't posted any videos. What's different between TikTok and Instagram? I don't know yet.
TikTok is used more.
I'm so behind on all of this, but this is the kind of stuff that we can do with more funds and get more content and resources out there. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And we're going to do an episode where we thank everyone individually. Even just the $5 a month is huge for us.
It adds up.
It adds up. So thank you to everyone. Thank you is not enough. I wish we could meet everyone at some point. And
I'm sending Hannah a copy of my book. That's for sure. Say thank you. And also thanks everyone who takes the time to write us letters. You know, I'm about 150 emails behind. Heard from me. Please, please bear with me. I'm trying to get through them as quickly as possible. And a lot of people actually write very extensive feedback, sometimes positive, sometimes, you know, constructive criticism. And I appreciate that. Like we're learning and growing.
Well, it means we're doing it right. If people are thinking and even having problems with it, we get to learn too. So I like that process. I like getting constructive feedback that even though I kind of feel a little bit, I don't know, you have that pang in your solar plex where you think it's coming, but if you walk away from the email, transcending that and coming away with a little bit of nugget that helps you, you get to grow and it informs your audience. So it's a healthy relationship in that regard. So I love that.
I love that too, especially with the last one with Cameron about corporate culture. I think what was interesting for that, I thought we had expressed this, that this was like sort of one side. This is coming from the angle of somebody who was, you know, in the power position, trying to figure out his responsibility and where things went too far. Obviously, it's a much bigger topic. And down the road, we'd love to do another one with somebody who is, you know, on the other side of the corporate culture and was like, you know, in one of those companies and can give us some insider information and how they left it.
And to your point, Sarah, you have to be able to have, I don't know, messy conversations where you don't get it right.
We're not going to get it right all the time.
Yeah. So if you're offended, hang in there.
Yeah. You may also be offended by this next episode where we cover the Jehovah's Witnesses, fondly referred to in the space as the J-dubs.
The J-dubs.
And, you know, we took a little break from some of the heavier content that we've been doing recently, partly with Cameron and also partly with Ian, our next guest.
Although they all have a heavy aspect to them, I think, too.
Well, all that to say is I think we need to do another episode with somebody who, and I have a couple people lined up who have had a much darker experience in the Jehovah's Witnesses church. But I think that it's great that we have this one to sort of set the stage.
Well, also, I mean, that's the way these things work, right? People had a way darker experience than we did in Nexium. So
yes,
you know, you're not going to get everyone who's going to come in and guns a-blazing. Some people actually could have a positive experience and leave.
That reminds me, someone wrote me, and I think this is a really good distinction. They were giving me feedback. They felt that I was finding the silver linings in terms of what's showing what's good about some of these people. And I really want to stress, I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to show what looks good on the outside that draws people in. I'm not saying, oh, but they did this good thing, in the same way I might say like, yeah, I got good out of Nexium. And for me, I did get some good out of Nexium, but obviously a lot of bad things exist and that we talk about that. So I just want to make that clear moving forward. When we're showing what was good about it, we're not trying to make excuses for them or be apologists. We're trying to show what it looks like so you can see that kind of red flag when presented with such things.
I think we've demonstrated that at this point.
I hope so.
Let's introduce Ian.
Yeah. Ian James Corlett, his voice has been heard by millions of people as the voice of iconic cartoon characters, major TV networks, national brands. That's how we met in the voice world. You may have heard him in the Emmy-nominated Dinosaur Train, in Cartoon Network's zany Johnny Test, or in the latest Disney Junior hit, Vampirina.
And going further back, Ian originated the iconic English dub voice of Goku in Dragon Ball Z, as well as voicing other 90s icons such as Mega Man, which I remember, and Bob in Reboot.
He really is a big deal in the voice community here in Vancouver. I actually met him in the studio, and I'll let him tell that story when we get to the interview. Ian spent most of his time in front of a microphone, but today it's to voice a different kind of story, his own.
He joins us to share his journey from born and raised Jehovah Witness to church elder to ex-J-Dub. And just an FYI, he might get disfellowshipped just for being on this episode, which, if you don't know, is just a polite way of saying shunned.
It sounds a little bit culty. Without further ado, Ian Corlett. Ian Corlett.
Yes. Present.
We're doing
it. Accounted for.
Present. I think this is history in the making.
I think so too.
Right,
I mean,
here.
We go way back. I remember when this podcast was a glimmer in your eye.
Yep. We reconnected around the time of the vow. And then when we started the podcast, you, from the beginning, were like, you need to do an episode on the Jehovah's Witnesses. And I was like, yes, we do. And the whole time you're like, one day I'll tell my story. Then all of a sudden,
yep,
you were ready.
This is my coming out.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Great and a little cautious. You know, I'm not a cautious person, but when it comes to this part of my life, I've always been very cautious because, you know, you wouldn't have known, even though we worked together. We didn't work together tons, but I was never one of those JWs. That's short for Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yes. And we can use that from now on because it takes too long to say. J-dubs.
The J-dubs. So I was never one of those J-dubs who like wore it on my sleeve and like proselytizing all the time, which is what is very much encouraged. Mm-hmm. But we'll get into this. Like, thank the plastic Jesus for my parents who really said, look, you've got to exist in this world. So don't be nuts.
Right.
So,
right.
So thank goodness.
Great.
I refer to them as like small L liberal J-dubs. Mm-hmm. They were fully in, fully in, but they didn't sweat the small stuff the way a lot of J-dubs do. So you're not going to hear about my horrible childhood because it wasn't. They were great. And I really feel awful for people who you know, did suffer under this system, because that's by far the more normal classic JW story for kids. Mm-hmm. It's like it was just a living hell, especially if you had parents who really wanted you under the thumb.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're definitely going to want to hear about your journey being a JW. Before we even get to that, we wanted to give our listeners who don't know much about Jehovah's Witnesses the cliff notes. But before that, can we tell our audience our connection and how we met? And
let's see if our stories line up.
Put it into context. I have a pretty strong recollection, but you go first and I'll tell you mine.
We knew each other, as you do, especially in Vancouver. It's a pretty small community of voice actors. And that's like that's almost entirely my career other than writing. But I've never been an actor in terms of like on-screen stuff. So the incident that I remember where this true connection came about between you and me was, I think we were working on a show called Geronimo Stilton, based on the books. Like, you were all over that, right?
I was Taya Stilton.
Yeah,
I was Geronimo's sister.
You were like really
still
in it. And I was a guest or something. So I showed up, and as you do, you chat. And I had mentioned, this is around 08, 09, 10, somewhere in there. I don't know what it was. I was writing a book, and the book was entitled E is for Ethics. And this actually does connect to being a J-dub, because we were on the way out. We were ready to go. And I had two little kids at the time, and I wanted to write a book that engaged kids and families to talk about ethics, like, you know, compassion, empathy, honesty, stuff like that. So I was talking about this book, and it did get published, and you heard about it.
And I have it. You gave me a copy later.
So clearly the ethics thing, Nexium.
That was my way in.
That's a buzzword.
Ooh.
Big buzzword. Yeah.
That's a big Nexium buzzword.
You weren't getting out of there without a pitch.
Nope. No. And I was very familiar with pitches.
Right. What did I say?
Well,
I don't even remember
this.
Yeah,
you know, we were just talking. And I got to say, I'm sure you've got detractors and like, oh, Sarah, you know, you were in this thing and I don't care if you apologize, whatever.
Yeah.
But what appealed to me is almost immediately you kind of downplayed the weirdness of Nexium, which I thought, that's exactly what I did as a witness. Mm. It's like, it's not that weird. It's not really, you know, you just get past that, because here's all the good stuff. And, you know, you concentrated on the good stuff, right?
That's right.
The executive program or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But here's what got me. This was the hook. You dangled Mark Vicente's name, and I had just watched What the Bleep mm-hmm. Do We Know. I was in sort of searcher mode, I guess, because we're almost out, or we were out at the time, like done. And, you know, when you come out of something like that, you're looking for, well, there's got to be something mm-hmm. else that I can, you know, join, even though those that know me, I am like the least joiny person ever. Like, I run from that. Like, let me go.
Yeah, you must have been allergic.
So anyway, that's what got me. You should meet my friend. He's the director of What the Bleep Do We Know? And I went, wow. I'm in, because I'm all about networking. So off I went mm-hmm. to your location on Georgia.
Yeah.
Yes.
We go, I think it was downstairs. Anyway,
yes, it was. Yep.
Yep. In
and
the basement.
We're sitting there and I'm meeting this guy. I go, it's very engaging. Yeah. He's made this thing that I appreciate. This is really great. And then you guys started talking, and I knew it was coming, about the programs and, you know. And I think to encapsulate it, I hope I was polite.
You were very polite.
My response was sort of two or three things. One, how much is it? I'm successful, but my career doesn't mean that mm-hmm. much to me. You know, babies need new shoes. So, okay, there's the first non-starter. The second non-starter was mm-hmm. I just came out of this thing that, you know, is like all-consuming. You know, here's the rules, here's the stuff. And I went, I'm not in a big rush to get into something else. And the third big one was, speaking of allergic, I am allergic to anything run by a dude, like, period. And
for
then,
sure.
And I remember saying this to you.
Right.
I said, yeah, I looked some stuff up and you call them Vanguard? And that was another one of those Sarah moments. Yeah.
I knew how to handle that one.
Yeah.
It's just a name for a leader of a philosophical movement.
Jesus.
Just ignore that red flag.
I'm going to be a real tough sell. That was my position.
Fair.
So how do you remember it?
Okay. I remember the second half. I don't remember pitching you at Geronimo Stilton, although I believe you that that happened. I remember the book part. I thought it was our mutual friend, whose name I'm not going to mention, who is also in voiceover, who brought you to that intro.
No.
That's what I had remembered.
Well,
it was me?
Use Mark Vicente. Mark Vicente is indirectly, I think, responsible for a lot of the enrollments. His name is dropped in a lot of meetings.
With his permission, like, yeah, I was nobody. And I was like riding the What the Bleep coattails. For sure, because he had street cred. I would ask people, have you seen What the Bleep? And if their answer would determine my next step. And then I would go from there. So like that was part of the whole package or whatever. But I thought it was our mutual friend who's also in voiceover that brought you. I didn't realize it was me.
I found out about the mutual friend later and went, oh, okay. Interesting.
I trust your memory on that. I remember sitting with you and just being like, I would love Ian to do this because like, I just feel like I connected with you, which clearly we did later, legitimately, as we are now. And then you were like, I like this, and I like you, and I like Mark, but I'm an ex-JW, which the thing is, I didn't know anything about. Like, I knew there were some weird things, like I had a friend who grew up and I knew couldn't have birthday parties, and I heard about the blood transfusion thing, that JWs can't accept blood. So I had, like, those two data points, but I didn't have the whole... Like, for me, it's just like another offshoot of Christianity that's a little bit strict, you know, like that's all I really knew. Then, and that it was extreme, you know? And so when you said that, I was like, what I'd been told is that people project their own experiences when they see something and they think, oh, I see this, this, and this, therefore it is like X, Y, Z that I've already experienced. I just thought you were wrong. You know, just like, I understand that that's what you're seeing and you're reacting to it, but that's like a wrong projection. And that's, this is not that.
Yeah.
Well, that was our own gaslighting of ourselves, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's like a way of saying, I know that's what you think you're seeing. You were intuitively picking up on all the red flags that so many people miss, you know, because you'd already been through it.
Yeah, and it was all I knew, right? So now, fortunately, we were not like bubble JWs where, you know, there was no outside world. My dad had a retail business and... And that was frowned upon too. You know, you buy something at a certain price and you sell it for more? You should be a window cleaner where there is a wage and that's good, honest work. You know, I mean, no one really said that out loud, but that was definitely a thing. And there's a difference between a believer and a true believer. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys are, you know, well aware of that. Like, true believers are like, no doubts, nothing, no questioning, nothing. And he was a skeptic. I mean, anyone who knew my dad, oh my Lord, was he a skeptic about everything. But he did sort of take the J-Dub faith with less skepticism because he was a very young teen when his mother became a witness. So that's part of the family history. So I was like third generation. And it really makes a big difference when you're born in. Sure, everyone's supposed to, you know, you know, at a certain point, the term is you make the truth your own and you make a decision to get baptized. Mm-hmm. Everyone is free to make your decision. Yeah, sure. You're free.
Of course. But if you leave, then you have nothing.
Exactly.
Before we hear your whole story, will you tell our listeners like the sort of cliff notes about what's the structure of the company? What's the structure of the organization? Like, fill in some of the gaps for those who don't know much.
I'll try to make it quick. It was one of the movements that came out of the Pennsylvania, New York area in the late 1800s. Lots of stuff came out around that time. Seventh-day Adventists, the Mormons were a little bit maybe earlier than that. Everyone was questioning the major religious groups, and especially in that part of America. So that's where it came out of. The first guy who started the movement was Pastor Russell, Charles Taze Russell. That was about 1870. And they started out with a really good idea because they poured into the scriptures and said, what does it really say? What, you know, let's drop all the what we think it means. Let's dive in and be Bible students. So that's very appealing. It was something that I don't regret either, because being a Bible student at that time, so like, you know, in the 70s and earlier, was a major part of witness life. Like, we're going to study these scriptures. So we knew the Bible way better than, you know, an evangelical faith or run-of-the-mill Catholic or something. Like, you know, they just go, John 3:16, love, love, love. And, you know, we were like, what does it really say? So that's where it started. And then he died and there was this schism. And, you know, then there was this corporate raider who became the president of the Watchtower. And his name was Judge Rutherford. I don't think he was a judge. I think it was a nickname. I'm not positive on that one. But anyway, he was, oh man, what a piece of work he was. He was the one that you know, brought in, no, we're not going to celebrate Christmas, all sorts of stuff.
And the concept with that is that's too worldly and can distract you from the true voice of
God.
No,
it was really pragmatic. It was like, he wasn't born on that day, so why would we celebrate it? It was a general culture of like, what's fun? Let's get rid of that. You know, birthdays went out around that time as well. So then there was this series of presidents who ran the religion. So after Rutherford, there was a guy named Nathan Knorr. And each one of these eras, like Nathan Knorr was in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and he started running it like it was IBM. And everyone had to start looking the same. And, you know, here's the way you're supposed to dress. And congregations were more like franchises. This is all my projection on how the thing morphed from one thing to another. There was another president, Fred Franz. And then this concept of the governing body came into play. And that was in the 70s. Now, they had a governing body before.
Which is like seven or eight dudes, right?
You know, one of the things that witnesses always say is the light keeps getting brighter, brothers, and Jehovah talks to us and, you know, reveals these new truths, which begs a real great question. So was Jehovah wrong at that other new truth that he said? I thought he was infallible.
Right. This is a dumb question. Maybe is Jehovah synonymous with God?
Sorry. Yeah. How did I forget that?
Just double checking. Like, and why is he called Jehovah in this faith?
In the scriptures, any Bible. First of all, the Jews do not speak God's name, Yahweh.
Say Hashem.
Yeah, Hashem. Exactly. You're not supposed to. You're Hashem. In trouble. You just said it.
Yep.
Jewess.
Hashem is mean the name.
I thought it was Yahweh, but I don't know Hebrew, so.
I think Hashem is okay to say, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a very good Jew.
Maybe that's the acceptable way to refer to God.
I think so.
That's probably right. Yeah. So we, in as part of this early movement of Bible study, it's like, hey, why do we keep calling? And the Lord God said to God, and then my God, you know, like he had a name and there was, you know, references for why the early witnesses said, no, we should be referring to him by his name. Would you just, you know, Nippy, would we refer to you as, hey, man? Well, actually, we do.
It's true.
Hey, man. But it's like, no, you use someone's name when you want to talk to someone. So God's name is Jehovah. So that was another thing growing up. Anytime we'd be watching TV or Monty Python's Life of Brian. And anytime there was the name Jehovah that came up, we just, whoa, yeah, we know that, you know, that's insider stuff, you know. So Jehovah's Witnesses are witnesses to the Lord God, whose name is Jehovah. So that's the name. I should have started with that.
That's okay.
I'm all about the structure of it because it really is, the structure is everything. So this governing body came into play. And from the early 70s, this became the new thing. Okay, we may still have a president, but the governing body of, you know, seven, eight men.
And how is that determined?
Self-elected, right?
And the Lord came unto me and said, you are. And of course, there's politicking, of course.
So what happens if you just decided the Lord came to you? Are you now in competition for that spot?
No.
Like what's
because I'm not in Bethel. I'm not in the system. Bethel is like the headquarters where, you know, people live and work. So there are other members of the 144,000. So we do believe in heaven, but we believe that there's a very, very limited number of people because of something in Revelation that will go to
scarcity.
Heaven. So the rest of us are looking forward to a paradise earth. So you're going to die. And then in the twinkling of an eye, you're going to wake up in paradise. Hey, who wants to go to heaven anyway? You know, clouds and harps. Ah, earth is better. We know what this is. So that was what the teachings were. not to make light of it, but you know, that's what it was.
But overall, like the thing that I got, and just from the brief prep with A, reading Amber Scora's book, Leaving the Witness, and Leah Remini and Mike Rinder's Aftermath show on Jehovah's Witness, we got a pretty good backstory of like the fundamental beliefs. But some of the recaps that like kind of stuck out to me was that like higher education isn't necessary because you don't need that in utopia, that it's God's one true organization. If you are going to go to utopia, since there are only 144,000 spots, you have to prove yourself. Like, you're not, even if you're JW, you're not going to, not guaranteed a spot. You have to be good and pure.
Faith is demonstrated by your works. But the vast majority, I mean, there's millions of JWs. So the vast majority of them don't have that hope of being one of the 144,000 to go to heaven. But you still get paradise on earth. So,
so it's one or the other, as long as you're a JW. Okay.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
All right.
You know, that doctrine has changed over the years as well. And this is going to get into, you know, where I started to go, I think I'm out.
When I first came out on Nexium, one of the first interviews that I did was before The Vow. It was for A&E. It was called Cults and Extreme Beliefs. I remember having a conversation with one of the crew, and they'd also done an episode with some JW survivors. And I said, so what's the bad thing that's going on there? Like, what's culty about it? And he looked at me, he's like, dude, it's a safe haven for pedophiles.
That's the whole thing about JW. It has a benign reputation. Right.
That's what I wanted to ask Ian. Like, is that the main abuse? Like, obviously, there's lots of things that check off the cult list, and we'll talk about those things. But like, that seems to be the main problem that I see. Is that accurate?
It is. But if I may, because that does like blend really, really easily into us leaving.
Okay.
I'm going to be an apologist a little bit for the J-dubs. And this is a question I have for you guys and for everyone listening. Because I mean, this cult thing is. Yeah. Crazy in today's world. Like, everything is a cult. Everything. So put yourself back in the 1930s, mm-hmm. and someone mm-hmm. comes to your door, and everyone's got a religion, right? Mm-hmm. It's a different time. It's a different place. People are leaning on their fence posts. Hey, neighbor, you know, all of that stuff. And you're a member of the Catholic Church, or, you know, the Church of England, or, you know, one of the big three. And someone comes along and goes, you know what? All of that is bullshit. And we have a belief system based on the same Bible that you read and study and believe in.
Mm.
And there's no hell. That was a huge doctrinal.
Wait, there's no hell, but there is Satan?
No hellfire.
Okay. What's Satan do? What's he up to?
He's the temptress.
Satan's a bad guy, and he's in control of the world. So here's another little sidebar. As the Jehovah's Witnesses believe, so we're living in the last days. Satan's in control. He's really stirring things up. And then Jesus came to, stay with me, Jesus came into being on the earth in 1914, and he's kind of watching stuff. But he's here, but he's not really, you know, he's not going to get his fingers involved and get dirty as Satan goes and does all this bad stuff. And, it's getting worse. It's getting worse. We're in the end of the end of the end of the end of the end. And then Armageddon's going to happen, which is the mighty battle. Then we will have paradise on earth for 1,000 years. And then Jehovah God is going to put Satan in jail for that period of time. And then he's going to let him out because he's a good guy. Parole. Right. As a great comedian once said, you know, here's my problem with this whole story about, you know, God and the devil. Wasn't he an ex-employee? Shouldn't you have been able to do something about that guy, Satan? No. We're just going to let him go. And he was a bad dude. Yeah, he used to be an angel, but now he's a bad guy. My hands are tied. What can I do? Well, apparently you're God. You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So there's like, these are sort of general religious things that I have issue with that are Christian things. Like, wait a second, that doesn't add up. So back to my crazy story. So then after 1,000 years, then there's going to be another battle between God and Satan, and God will be victorious. And then it's going to be extra special after that.
Like, where does forever. The Armageddon fit into that?
Well, that was the big battle. That, like, where we're living now, Armageddon's going to come now. Like, it could be the Russians with the nukes, and that's a whole nother prophetic thing.
There's
like,
always a boogeyman, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The king of the north is what the Bible refers to Russia as. So we say. So anyway, so that, like, there's the house of cards, right? Mm-hmm. And me being of an actor and a screenwriter and a creator of fiction, I go, well, wait a second. If it's all written down that in the end of the end, there's going to be a battle and God's going to win, Why don't we just cut to the chase? What are we doing all this for? Oh, well, that wouldn't be a great story. And that wouldn't keep people in. And that wouldn't, you know, our religious world is over. And that goes for every Christian religion, no matter if they're high control or not.
We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag I Got Out movement and find resources at igotout.org.
So this gets me to cults. You guys are experts on it, and everyone that you talk to is an expert, and you know it builds on the data that you get. And I don't believe that Pastor Charles Taze Russell, when he sat down and cracked the books open and said, let's look at this, I don't think he was starting a cult. I don't think it at all. Mm-hmm. I think cults can develop. Now, it's different if there's one dude like L. Ron Hubbard.
Right.
Okay. He literally is on the record with his buddies of going, I'm going to sell people a piece of blue sky. And that's it. Like, yeah. I mean, that's you started a cult. Okay. So that's really obvious. With the witnesses, I'm trying to be really realistic. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it started that way. So now back to my family history. So someone's knocking on your door and they say, you know what? All that stuff you're learning and, you know, the collection plate and at every church, we don't do that. We don't believe in hell. When you die, you die. And if you're, you know, a bad dude, you're just not coming back to life in the paradise. Oh, well, that's not so bad, but sure like to live in that paradise. So, okay, I'm in. If everyone around you has a religion of record, everyone, you know, except for those, you know, long-haired philosophers in the early days, you kind of go, well, I don't really love the religion I'm in. One of the key historical points of the early J-Dubs is they were kicking the crap out of the Catholic Church. Like, they called them out all the time. One of the greatest pamphlets in the late 1930s from this Judge Rutherford guy who was running the show was Religion is a Snare and a Rack. So, I mean, that's appealing to Joe Blow, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you go, yes, it is, because I know that priest and he's full of crap. Mm-hmm. And oh, so here's my grandfather's story. Two things. This is in Saskatchewan. He was born in Austria, but he was a Ukrainian. You know, he would go into town literally in a horse and buggy. Now, I mean, it was the 30s. It wasn't like super oldie timey, but you know, that's what he had. Mm-hmm. So he'd go into town. And on this one occasion, he would get some extra butter or milk or whatever he was getting, and he'd go by the church. And it was on a Friday, as the story goes. And he goes, I'm going to drop off this extra milk or butter or whatever. Maybe it was a quart of bourbon. Who knows? But I'm going to give it to the priest. And he looks in the basement of the rectory, and he's, you know, where the guy's got his apartment, and he's cooking up a pork chop. And it's supposed to be Fish Friday, right? Because they're Orthodox Catholic, like the Russian church, right? And it's supposed to be Fish Friday. And this guy's having a big hunk of meat. So, you know, my grandfather, he was an interesting guy. He knocks on the door. He gives him this stuff. And he goes, hey, what? Smells like pork chops. And he goes, hey, George, just between you and me. You know, sometimes looked really fresh at the butcher shop. So I know it's supposed to be Fish Friday. He goes, you know, in the back of his head, he's going, what a hypocrite. We're all supposed to be doing, you know, toeing the line. So there was that little thing that kind of made him go, well, that's not right. And then they had a baby that was stillborn, and the church pulled the old purgatory thing. Now, I don't know how much you guys know about Catholic or the belief in purgatory, but basically, you know, well, we don't know if he's going to heaven or hell, but a donation might nudge him in the right direction. And that's what they said to my grandparents. And that did not sit very well at all. It's like, our baby just died. All of those things, I'm sure there was other parts of the story, meant that when Joe J. Dubb went, hey, neighbor, I've got something for you. And it's mostly kicking the crap out of those Catholics that I know you're on the fence about anyway. They went, okay, I'm in.
Got it.
So
interesting.
I would have done something similar because it was sort of like the rebel religion. Totally the rebel religion.
Yeah. See, I don't see that as being an apologist. I see that as explain, and this is what we like to do in our podcast. We'd like to explain why people join, like what was good about it at the time, because we all know nobody joins a cult on purpose. Right. What was that appeal? That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of things start out that way. And I haven't done the research and could say whether he had good intentions or bad intentions, but it seems like down the road, as like this whole governing body with seven or eight dudes in New York decide everything, overseeing branch committees, overseeing, tell me if I have this right, circuit overseers, overseeing elders, overseeing the congregation. I mean, that's like, it's like our stripe path, right? Like there's levels that people get to, but the people at the top, who chose them and how do they get into that position of power, which is where it seems to be problematic.
Right.
The problem I see is it's not enrolling you on the merits and principles of the religion. It's appealing to some sort of aspect of you of a hook. It's using your hate for Catholicism to align yourself with something. And there's not a real ideology there. And it seems from what we saw in the A&E thing, where someone would die, they'd write a real letter because they write a letter to them and then say, how was this that offered as an alternative, because they knew the person was vulnerable, as opposed to an honest exchange of this is what this stands for, you'd be a part of this. And if that's how they have to enroll you into an idea, it's not a good idea.
Yeah. And it's interesting because even in my relatively brief lifespan, I've seen the religion change. And it's light years from when my grandfather said, yeah, that sounds like a good religion to be involved in, right? If I'm going to be in a Christian religion. And, you know, to your point of ideology, a lot of the beliefs are the same. Although one huge thing that differentiates Witnesses from the rest of Christianity, most of the rest of Christianity, is they don't believe in the Trinity. The Trinity doctrine is that there's the God, the Father, and the Holy Spirit, and that they're all mysteriously one thing. And loads of people go, what? That seems weird. We believe that Jesus actually was I still do it. Anyway, the J-Dubs
takes time.
Believe that Jesus is God's son. And just back to Pastor Russell, as I was starting to wake up, one of the things that I did was use the skills that the witness world educated me with, which I do not regret, was we were so analytical and so knowledgeable about every other faith, so that you could knock holes in it. But you don't ever aim that gun back at us.
Of course not.
So I aimed that gun at everything and went, let's have a look. So one of the things that I think the early founders missed was saying that the Bible is the inspired word of God, and we're not going past this book as it sits on our desk right now. If they were true Bible students, like what happened in the Enlightenment in the 15th century, they studied and went, hang on, where did these books come from? Why do we have these gospels when there was all these other gospels? And like everything, and this gets back to my abhorrence of joining anything that's run by a bunch of dudes or one dude, even worse, there was meetings about it in Nicaea. They're like, okay, let's figure out what books are going to be in this official book that we're going to now call the Bible. Well, you got to go past that because that's politics. That's a bunch of guys sitting around in robes going, let's not have the book of Judas. I'm not going to have that one. And ooh, that other gospel account where they actually show or wrote that Jesus was a child and was using his superpowers to blast other kids that he didn't like, and he would strike them dead as a 10-year-old. Oh, we're not going to have that in the Bible. Probably a good idea.
So it's actually a different Bible.
Oh, well, no. This is the Bible that I'm referring to right now is the Bible that all Christians use. Now, the J-Dubs do have their own translation of the Bible. You can really get into the weeds about, their translation says things, da, da, da. I go to the source, which is, I'm not nitpicking over any translation. Like, if I could read Greek and Hebrew, maybe we can have a discussion.
Right.
But we're not going to quarrel over, well, he refers to being God's son and God is capitalized. So that means, no. Talk about being in the weeds.
We don't have to do that.
It's crazy. So where I think the fatal flaw in these early 1870s religious groups were, is that they didn't go past that book that they had in their hand saying, this is the Bible, the King James Version or whatever version you want to use. They didn't go past that. How did we get this group of texts? Because once you do that, then the house of cards really falls apart. You go, did Jesus even really exist? There's a lot of argument about that. Not to mention, oh boy, you see, you got me all revved up. Not to mention that these quote unquote eyewitness gospel accounts were written decades after he was dead. I can't remember what I ordered for lunch, let alone the word for word, you know, writings of something. You see, now I'm into Bible talk. They were all based on the book of Mark. So one guy wrote something, who knows if it was even Mark, and then all the other gospel accounts went, hey, that's good. I'm just going to continue. So anyway, so there's my crash course in Bible history.
Right. And we've all played the telephone game.
Yeah.
To bring us back to your journey in this, based on what I saw in Leah and Mike's episode about it, I was like, well, that takes off all the boxes, but I can understand how it didn't start that way. And I think actually that's the case for a lot of groups. Starts off with good intentions and humans are fallible. And how do you have checks and balances when there's only 7 or 8 dudes on the governing body? Like that's like such a glaring problem for me anyway, especially with some of the misogyny and stuff than the, you know, women's subservience to men and all that stuff that comes later, right?
It's a huge problem. And just to cap off the family history, my uncle, when the governing body first got set up in the early 70s, my uncle was one of the major players in, like, he sat on the governing body.
Wow.
So we had a direct line to Brooklyn Bethel. And, you know, that sort of elevated our family, you know, like, ooh, we're really in. And my dad served as an elder. I served as an elder in the congregation as well.
What does that mean? What is an elder?
Well, I'm an older man, even though I was in my 30s or early 40s. So it means that you're one of the guys who, you know, will get up in front of the congregation and give a talk. You're one of the people who sits on judicial, I'm using air quotes for your listeners, judicial committees, which is basically a three-man judicial, like three high school educated men basically hold in their hands people's lives. Because, well, we don't need a hellfire teaching to go, you know, you better get in line or else you're going straight to hell. No, we can ruin your life right now. Because if you're guilty of something that is unforgivable, you will be disfellowshipped. And that means shunned.
Yep.
So if you take away someone's whole social system, I mean, talk about a control system, right? So very similar to Scientology, very similar to Mormonism. I always, you know, kindly referred to the Witnesses as, you know, sort of Scientology Mormon light. Because they're the most passive aggressive group you'll ever meet. I mean, that's how they roll.
That's kind of a question I have going right now. It seems like seeing some of the stuff on A&E, which was the extreme witness, Jehovah's Witness, it seemed like your scenario has kind of one foot in, one foot in society. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's very accurate.
Kind of like us with NXIVM.
You could go through it without it being so dogmatic. So you're at the whim of like what region you're in, who's the leader and your elder in your region. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Yes. And and when I served as an elder in our congregation, we were a pretty warm and fuzzy bunch. You know, it was in the 90s and, you know, yuppies were, it was right downtown, like west side of Vancouver. And we were kind of like, we've believed all the stuff. We had all the literature. We had all the directives. But, you know, starting in the 70s, things got a little softer. There was a little bit of wiggle room, but it depended on what kind of congregation you were in.
Yeah, that's my question. So could someone, say, from Montana come up and want a community up here and be horrified by the lack of...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, the step right before being an elder is being a ministerial servant. So it's like an elder in training or whatever color sash you guys used to.
I was going to say, do you get a sash promotion for that?
No.
Jump?
And this was in the late 80s. And I had grown my sideburns like just to the bottom of my ear. And if you can remember how hip that was at the time, like short hair and long
vaguely
sideburn, ooh, pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I remember
smoking,
going to a wedding and you know, chat, and some young guy comes up and he goes, "You're a ministerial servant?" Yeah. How do you get away with it with those?
Right.
Like, that's okay. the kind of thing happen, right? So exactly. To your point, it really depended on where you were. Like I said, thank goodness that I had the parents that I had, because I had two older brothers and we lived through the whole, you know, Beatles late, you know, 70s time where everyone who was anything had long hair, right? And it didn't mean like down your back.
You were of the era.
Yeah. So my dad would get called up on the carpet for, oh, you know, your son's hair is touching his collar, you know, that long. Not, I'm not talking about like, you know, Kurt Cobain down your back.
Right. Let me ask you, in terms of your level of committedness, had you had to get a blood transfusion, would you have accepted it or not?
Well, that's a good question, because
thank you.
When the doctrine first came in, which I think went back to the 40s, it was no blood. And just to give a little context, it's based on a scripture, which is really talking about slaughtering animals and eating animals. So that's what we base this transfusion thing on. You go, well, you know, if it's going inside you, just like intravenous feeding when you're in the hospital, you're eating it. You kind of go, really?
I was very disturbed to see all the headlines in the A&E thing about how many people, how many, and especially kids refused blood transfusion.
Awful.
And then they were like idolized in the newspaper, like the local press, about being these martyrs. I was like horrified.
Exactly. It was horrifying. And frankly, I always thought, you know what? I'll take the heat, especially when it came to kids. In Canada, you know, as we started having our kids, I took the position, look, social services or whatever the, you know, government entity was, they'll literally go, thanks, crazy religious people, we're taking it from here. And they would give your kid whatever it needed. And if that included a blood transfusion, that included a blood transfusion.
Good.
So I always went, you know what, that's going to be my out, because that one I'm not buying. And there's a reason why I'm not buying it, because in the early days, it was just like no blood transfusions. And then in the 70s, 80s, like then they would write these incredibly complicated articles about blood fractions and platelets and white cells. And they gave you all these loopholes.
Of course.
Like, don't take whole blood. But if you're paying attention and you went all the way to grade 12 in your education, you might catch that there's a kind of an out here. You can take that. Just don't take whole blood. And the whole community, a whole system of older men were created to go to hospitals, you know, to explain this sort of thing. Here's what we can take. Here's what we can't take. And again, Joe Blow, JW, street level, those poor people would just go, no blood, no blood. That's what it says. No blood. And for anyone who was kind of paying attention, you go, okay, there's a bit of an out here. And I didn't buy it. So I went, I sure hope I never have to worry about it, because I think I'll have to take the punishment on that one. I just go, oh, I was out of it. They had me so full of morphine, I said yes.
Yeah. Was that one of your red flags that woke you up?
Cumulative, yes. That was one of them. I never bought in.
Hey, culty listeners, lovers of cult-busting content, ALBCers, culty kids. We've gotten a lot of requests to put up a link where people can throw some funds up behind the podcast and help support what Little Bit Culty is doing. And you know what? That's a great idea. Thank you for that. And as we've gotten to know other podcasters and learn more about this whole podcast thing, we've been learning that it takes a whole lot of different resources and different sources of revenue and listener support to keep it rolling. Sponsorships and ads and the occasional appeal to amazeballs listeners like you. That's why we added a way for anyone who wants to support the show to do exactly that. You can go to littlebitculty.com/support. Or the link in our Instagram bio, or smash that link in our show notes to make a one-time contribution or a recurring one. We will pay your support forward with a galactic level of love and light and healing resources, of course. Again, it's littlebitculty.com/support, or check out the link in our Instagram bios. Next up, we really got to figure out what to call you, our listenership. ALBC Nation? Flying Monkeys? We're going to have to workshop that. Thanks, guys.
If you want to go to what woke me up.
Yes.
Let's go back to 1980.
Great. I was 3 years old.
Here's something that everyone who is a Jehovah's Witness is, this might give you a clue as to, you know, my mindset. You're supposed to remember when you get baptized, because that's the day that you become a Jehovah's Witness. You're a kid, but, you know, when you get baptized, you made the decision and you're on the hook. But you're a fully fledged J-Dub. I don't remember the date. It's supposed to be like your birthday, right? I don't know. I think it was 80, 81. So somewhere in there. Anyway, so I get baptized. And one of the key doctrinal points my whole life growing up was 1914, if you've been paying attention at home, was when Jesus came to the earth. And this is when everything changed. And the doctrine was this generation alive in 1914 shall not pass away before the end comes. Well, there's a lot of definitions of what a generation is, right? Mm. Some people have it as small as 25 years, right? It's like a generation. The kids have kids, right? And then others, it's more like 60 or 70. It's like this. Anyway, there's a lot of wiggle room in there. Mm-hmm. But even without the wiggle room, I kind of did the math in the early 80s. And I went, okay, like in 83 or 84, that means 1914, those people are 70. Well, hardly anyone lives to 100. So if we're getting to the 90s, I thought, and if they change the goalposts, if there's some doctrinal, we've been thinking, and maybe it's not exactly that those people, and by the way, that's someone who's born in 1914. Mm-hmm. The old doctrine was you had to be aware and like, ooh, the world changed in 1914. So, I mean, at minimum, you've got to be 10 or 15 to make it make any sense. You're not a little kid. So I just made this marker in my head. If they change the goalposts in the late 80s or 90s, I'm out. And sure enough, they did. Basically, what they started doing was, well, this generation's a little fuzzy. So it's we might have had that wrong again. I thought the light came from your God, Jehovah, and why would he give you wrong information the first time? Well, it became brighter. It's like a dimmer switch. So maybe we got it wrong. Okay, fine. So then they changed it to those who were, it's like a rally race. So you could have a handoff. And so if you knew someone who was one of the 144,000, and you're one of the 144,000, you can kind of go, oh, well, you saw it, so I'm in. And then it got really fuzzy.
This seems to be a through line, Ian, with our guests, is that people start to do the math on something in their group, and they're like, wait a second. And the goalpost keeps changing, as happened many times with us in Nexium, as you probably have heard or read. You know, they keep changing what the criteria were for certain things.
That was the beginning, the drip, drip, drip. I don't know. Right. I don't know. Now, by this time, I'm married. And in 97, we have our first child. And I started to have a real, okay, that's child number one. 2 years later, child number two comes around. And I went, okay, now I got two. There's a 50% chance one of these is going to want to do something in the world that I work in for a living. And I did not want to subject any of my kids to what I had to go through. Now, this is not, I'm not a victim of child sexual abuse, or like, I don't have any of those sorts of horror stories. But what I had to do, Sarah, you will get this. I started in voiceover in Vancouver before there was any animation, before there was anything else happening, and it was commercials. And every year around late August, September, I would start getting booked for commercials, and I would have to kind of cagely, I don't think that's a word.
Yeah.
interrogate the people who were booking me to find out if it was a Christmas commercial, because I knew that would be like, I'd be in deep trouble if I did a Christmas commercial. So all these production companies, it was a different world then, right? Like the production company would just hire you. They didn't even audition. You just get the gig. Because, there was a smaller talent pool and, if people knew you could do it.
You were one of them. You were one of the main.
So
you're the lifeguard.
And I'm sure these guys would go, what does that matter? Mm-hmm. But, and I was always really careful about how I was wording it. Like, oh, so what is it? And one I got called up on the carpet for was a restaurant chain commercial. I booked it. I did all my due diligence. I knew this is going to be fine. And it was a happy birthday to the keg. It's a restaurant. First of all, restaurants don't have birthdays, so who cares?
And you got in trouble?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, because people knew what I did for a living. And I was recognizable because I wasn't doing characters, right? It just sounded like me doing a commercial.
Right.
And they said, you know, it's come to our attention that there's a commercial. No. And I went, really? And then you try to apply logic to these people. Mm-hmm. Every year there was a convention where there was Bible dramas, right? And people would enact a Bible, you know, story at our big conventions. And of course, in those, you can have a bad guy, oh, big, bad, you know, King Saul or whoever. So whoever the bad dudes were, you know, or the Philistines, and all that stuff. Oh, yeah, you can play that part because it's a part in a Bible drama and we've sanctioned it. But you can't act as if you're celebrating Christmas or a bad guy. No, no, no. No, because the world is paying attention to you and your voice. No, they're not. I've never been recognized ever except in that little SS
community,
you know, where we're gonna catch you. So anyway, I don't know why. How did I get on that? I told you. I warned you.
Kids, the commercial, was that the final out?
No, no, no. So I had these kids and I went, that was just an example of what I had to go through.
Yeah.
You know, not to mention that this JW world sort of encourages by default leading a double life because right. You know, if you don't want to get literally tortured at school, you kind of have to find a balance there so you're not, you know, that kid who's trying to convert everyone to your religion.
Mm-hmm.
So it encourages this weird mindset.
Us versus them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's us versus them. But, you know, you need to live in the world, right? People mm-hmm. still need jobs. And it's weird. It's like you're in this secret, right? So I just didn't want to inflict that on my kids. I wanted them to be educated. I wanted them to be free to understand and not go, oh, what are they going to think at the Kingdom Hall if I do this? Like, I didn't want that. Mm-hmm. So that was when the second kid came around, that was what started the problem. So here's the real wake up. So I'm an elder in our congregation, and we've got a guy that moves from another congregation. And what happens is you get a letter. Oh, there's a new person coming in your hall. And here, and so the old congregation says, here's his records, you know, because you're supposed to keep track of how much time you spend out in the proselytizing work. And here's some stuff about him. Well, turns out this guy, he's an older man, and he comes in with his wife. And he's the father of his daughter's baby. Then you read a little bit more, and like, the guy's got a problem with kiddies. Right now, he's not always there. His long-suffering little humble wife, who I'm just going to call a spade, dumb as a brick, but also an enabler, which really pisses me off mm-hmm. because, you know, you can't live with a guy and go, I had no idea. You know, no, people that do this within families drive me nuts. Like, oh, no, 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 that never happened. You know, the family secret stuff, and we're going to rally around dad. You know, no, 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 no. So anyway, they're in our congregation, and I'm going, well, we got to do something about this. Well, you know, the book says, our handbook says, well, you know, until something happens in our congregation, we don't, you know, we're not supposed to. And so this is back to your point about safe haven for pedophiles. It is erroneous, and I want to make this really clear, to think that, you know, a congregation is going to go, hey, if you're a pedo, you're protected here. We're going to look after you. But by the way it's designed, the main concern of Jehovah's Witnesses is to not besmirch the bigger organization.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's just bad for them if that's
so
known.
Unlike,
right.
And this is another thing that we used to, you know, bang on about, oh, the Catholics, they're full of pedophiles. The priests are pedophiles, mm-hmm. the priests. So in this sense, it's not the elders who are pedophiles. It's not like the organizing, like the structure, but the structure by virtue of what's called the two-man rule, and I'll elaborate on that.
Thing. Yeah, we saw yes. that.
Means that those pedophiles are protected. They're shielded. Mm-hmm. So what happens is, unless you have two witnesses to an event or a crime, well, mm-hmm. we can't really prosecute in our wisdom of high school educated elders.
And what situation is there, like child abuse, where two other people are watching?
Exactly. It's never
right?
going to happen.
Like, it's just it's obscene.
It's never going to happen.
So that's how they're protected.
So that's how they're protected. So this guy's in our congregation, and well, we don't really, shouldn't probably. And I went, you know what? I don't care, guys. We would then separate out into book study groups, which take place in individual homes. And you'd have, 10, 15 people. There was so many meetings, you guys. Mm-hmm. We would have one on Tuesday. We would have two on Thursday for 2 hours. We'd have, going out in the proselytizing work. And then you'd have Sunday meetings. It was like meetings, meetings, meetings.
Do you think
that was
part of the strategy? Keep you so busy you're not thinking about how crazy it all is?
As it turns out, yes.
Well, the problem I'm hearing is there's an incentive to protect the image of the church as opposed to mm-hmm. evolving and becoming the principles that you're boasting.
Absolutely.
And there's no incentive to do that. In fact, it's de-incentivized to hold the church accountable to the principles that they're pretending to uphold.
Well, there was just a court ruling in Illinois where two elders have been found guilty of shielding a pedophile, like not reporting it to the police. And now in our congregation, we didn't have an instance of this guy did something here. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, no, we don't have anything to act on. So my conscience is clear on that one.
You also did something about it. You acted.
I did something about it. So I went to the people who had these, where he was attending a book study. And if they had kids, I said, just do not leave them alone with this guy, period. Like, just don't do it. I'm not going to get into the details, but you can fill in the blanks, right? Yes, got it. So, and tell your friends. That was my role. I didn't care what the official way of dealing with it was. Now, fast forward. This guy shows up. Oh, Jesus, makes my blood boil. He rarely came to the meetings, but, his wife would hobble in and hobble out, and he'd come and pick her up. So the way our Kingdom Hall was situated, it was in Fairview Slopes, for those of you in Vancouver. And he comes driving up to pick her up, and he stops in front in a white van. I kid you not. It's just the stereotype. Yeah. And
the proverbial white van. Yep.
Not only is that white, he's got a fluffy white puppy.
Oh, fuck. Yeah,
exactly. And I saw him coming, and all the kids are playing outside, and he pulls up, and he's like, oh, I'm going to pick up my wife. And I got this little puppy, and I was in the middle of a conversation. I said, excuse me. And I literally leapt over the fence and got right into his window. I said, you go park up the street. If I ever see you here with a puppy, like, you're going to have me to deal with. I don't care what anything else is what is supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. There's going to be trouble. What do you mean? What do you mean? I said, you know exactly what I mean. Now get out of here. And that was a big deal. So this is the beginning of me going, hold on. This system is, there's something up here. Now, fast forward. This is the end of the story. It's a year or so. Now my kids are little. It's probably, again, me and dates. It was probably 08. Let's just call it 08. So my son is 9. Daughter is 7, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And these people have now moved away, this couple. He's gone. He's out of our hair. But now our elder body knew all about him. We had the notes. We had the letters. We had all this. So they come back for a visit. And on a Sunday, it consists of two things. One is a public talk. Blah, 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 blah. The time is coming. The time of the end is going to be here. Get in line and be good Christians. Okay, so there's the public talk. And then there was something called a Watchtower study. And it was a magazine, the Watchtower that you see on the carts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you would put up your hand and comment on whatever the topic was that we were studying that week. So the guy who is in charge, the conductor of that meeting, is in charge of like pointing into the audience. People put up their hands. Hey, I got a comment. I got a comment. I got a comment. And, you get called on, you get a microphone, you go, here's my answer to that, blah, 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 blah. This guy comes to visit. They've been out of our hall for a while. Him and his wife come for a visit. And they're sitting right up near the front. And he puts his hand up, thinking, okay. The guy who was conducting the study goes, oh, yes, brother blank. And my wife pops her head up like a gopher out of a hole and goes, what? He just referred to him as brother. Like the person conducting the study has full discretion about who he calls on and who he doesn't call on.
Mm.
So you're going to call on that guy and you're going to call him brother? Because he was always kind of fringy anyway, right? Like it's not, he's not, first of all, he's, if he's doing what he's doing, he's not a brother. and don't call on him. So my wife literally pops out of her seat. We were sitting near the back because we had kids. And she said, I'm going. And I went, now we had had lots of conversations.
I'm so proud of her.
Because I was an elder and I was angst ridden because I'd go to these elder meetings and I'd come home and she'd have to listen to me. I would never reveal what the meeting was about, but I would be like, just, oh, I can't stand this. Like, am I going to do this? Because there's this tipping point, right? And I'm sure you guys went right through it too, where you go, if I'm in, I'm going to be all in and I'm going to play the game, which is not my nature. Like, I really don't want to play any game at all, ever. But I was ready to do it because it's your whole life, right? And I would be angst-ridden. And then, oh, you'd sit in these. This is like another episode. The judicial meetings. The three guys talking to some young person, usually a girl, who goes, yeah, so I had too much to drink at this party and I committed fornication and this happened. And then there's always some brother going, and where did he touch you? And one more time, was it over the clothes or was it, did you feel this? Did you feel that? Were you aroused? And I'm going, oh my God, this is where I turn into a Catholic. It's enough that they're here. Can we just tell them to say 4 Hail Marys and like, don't do it again? No. We need to get in there. And so anyway,
did you walk out with her?
Of course I did. Of course I did. And there was several people running to the door going, what's going on? Once again, my famous line, you know exactly what's going on. And we left.
I'm so proud of you
now,
guys.
According to my wife, she said we never went back. I think that was the beginning of the fade because the way to exit. And this podcast, depending on where it goes and who hears it, you know, they may have a judicial meeting about us all in absentia and we'll get officially.
Oh, so you haven't been officially disfellowshipped.
No. We just wanted to like fade because my parents were still involved. Yeah. Like we've had these big family ties.
It's complicated.
It's really complicated. Yeah. And this was before fading was like this is a term now. Like I thought I made it up. It didn't really exist.
And also the term chemo, right? Like physically in, but mentally out.
Thank you for bringing that up because I asserted for years. I said, I think there's 50% because most of the people who identify as Jehovah's Witnesses are born in. They're just in.
It's been a long time since you started to fade. How do you feel about it now? And what would you say to family or friends who might be listening who are still in and like what words of wisdom can you impart to them?
That's a great question, because the minute you question openly any doctrine, you are in apostate territory. And when you're an apostate, you're out. Like you will be disfellowshipped. So your whole world will disappear. An apostate who's disfellowshipped has less status than someone who's committed murder, you know, and is a family member who, well, they weren't ever disfellowshipped. Stuff happened and they're in jail, but you know. So my words of wisdom is be brutally, brutally honest with yourself. You know, do a cost analysis. Mm-hmm. If staying in and being in means that you're in constant conflict, that's not good for your health. That's not good for anything. You are literally living a lie. I think it's just the worst thing you can possibly do. So, you know, now we've got so many resources online. We've got a million people that have blogs and
speaking out about it.
Post YouTube videos, which just, you know, back in history in the late 90s, I remember the JWs being really concerned about the internet. And we know
Fair
why.
Enough.
Yeah. Well, you really have to go out of the way to put your head in the sand to avoid hearing. Yeah.
Well, actually, I see people quite often in Vancouver selling the books, the Watchtower books. My impulse is to go up and be like, do you know you're in a cult? And I know that won't help them at all. Any suggestion of what to say or what to ask that could possibly plant a seed of their awakening?
Basically, the question is, if someone told you or provided evidence that what you believed was completely false. Now, let's take it into another aspect of your life, maybe a job, and you find out that the company that you're working for is actually a giant ring for criminal activity. But you're just a guy who's, you know, working at the front desk or something. Mm-hmm. So if someone provided you with tangible evidence about that, you would probably act on that and go, ooh, I don't want to have anything to do with that. We've been lying to people forever. So if you're provided with tangible evidence, why would you continue to believe what you're supposed to believe? And I'll tell you, that family tie thing is the kicker. It's so hard for most people. So hard. Fortunately, I hate my family. So, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We had nothing to... We had lots to lose. Lots and lots to lose.
You know, like I said at the beginning, us having this conversation of you referring me to other JWs that we could have with the podcast and then eventually coming full circle to you being a guest and having this being your coming out party. Like, A, it means a lot to us that you trust us with that and that you feel comfortable now to, you know, potentially be permanently disfellowshipped. I appreciate your wisdom and your perspective. The most important question is, what chaps your ass the most about the JWs?
Let's get down to it.
That's a good one. What chaps my ass is religion, period. Mm. And that's an umbrella that encompasses all sorts of stuff. Because at the heart of every religion is the seed of a guru or a dude or a something. Prove that I'm wrong, that these are cults. Mm-hmm. Every single... Now, lots of them have evolved and they're nice and soft and they're really fluid and that's great. I mean, if you just want to have happy times and, you know, hey, there was a band. Woo! Yeah, Jesus is Lord. Okay, fine. Yeah. But, you know, when you really start getting into doctrinal stuff, that chaps my ass.
Yeah. Ian, it's been such a pleasure.
Anytime.
Imagine yourself walking into a forest. You can see the path and the trees. High above you, the air is crisp. You are walking towards your happy place. Allegedly, say it with me. Anything said here on this podcast about alleged cults, alleged MLM schemes, alleged douchebaggery, mindfuckery, criminality, spiritual fraud, or the like, is offered purely as commentary. Because the views and opinions expressed on A Little Bit Culty do not necessarily reflect on official policy or position of the podcast. And any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. So just let these words drift into your mind without needing to focus on any of them. You are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. Nobody's mad at you, unless you're actually a narcissistic, culty criminal. If that's you, cut that shit out. Don't be a fuckwad. But if that's not you, again, you are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. A Little Bit Culty loves you.
The highlight of our Hawaii trip is there was one day we couldn't find parking for the only beach that was easy for the kids and my mom to access. It's called Baby Beach in Maui. It's fantastic. Thanks for the recommendation, Tasha and Derek. Anyway, the parking was crazy and there was like this huge parking lot in front of the Jehovah's Witness Church.
Empty parking lot, might I add.
And listen, I was determined to get the kids to the beach. It was one of those days. And we rolled in and there was a lovely man. And I tried to remember this interview with Ian and I said, "Hello, brother."
Oh my God.
"We're from the Vancouver chapter. Is there any way we could park here?" And he was like, "Oh, you're from Vancouver. Do you know so-and-so?" And I was like, "I don't, but I know Ian Corlett." Do you know him?
You called yourself Sister Sarah, too.
Sister Sarah. Oh, my God. I'm totally going to hell. Wait, they don't believe in hell. Anyway, for any JWs out there, I'm really sorry that I used your parking and pretended to be one to get free parking for the beach. I felt like it had to be done, and it was a good story for the podcast. And forgive me for this sin.
Well, the best part is after he told us to go in the far end of the parking lot, which is closer to the beach, he starts walking back towards us. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, we've been found
out.
Here
he comes. I'm like, "Sarah, you're going to have to step up." And he comes up to me and I just point to Sarah.
Yeah.
And he goes, "1914 is the code to the lock over there in case the door is locked or the gate's locked and you guys need to get out." And he was really nice. And he was brother, what was his name?
I don't remember his name. And I said, "Thank you so much." And I said, "Happy Easter." And then I realized I don't celebrate Easter. And then I was like, "Just kidding."
Sarah like was like showering him with alohas and mahalos.
I was like, "Mahalo, happy." Oh, and I also said 1914. That's an important year. I was trying to make it look like I knew what happened in 1914.
And he just nodded and was like, "Just go to the beach."
Yes.
Peace out. Okay. I think Jehovah will forgive you for that, Sister Sarah. But I'm not sure we can forgive Jehovah for this next bit of...
Jehovah or Jehovah?
Jehovah. Here's my word salad.
This is in response to the 144,000 people that'll be resurrected. The Bible indicates that 144,000 people will be resurrected to heavenly life. In the vision recorded at Revelation 14:1-3, the Apostle John saw, quote, the Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000. In this vision, the quote, the Lamb represents the resurrected Jesus. John 1:29, Peter 1:19. Mount Zion represents the exalted position of Jesus and the 144,000 who rule with him in the heavens. Psalm 2:6, Hebrews 12:22. Those, quote, who are called and chosen to rule with Christ in the kingdom are referred to as, quote, little flock, Revelation 17:4, Luke 12:32. This shows that they would be relatively few in comparison with the complete number of Jesus' sheep, John 10:16. Obviously, that's the interpretation. Thank you, Jehovah, for that confusing interpretation of the scripture. And we'll end on that note. Thank you, everyone, for listening in on the J-Dub. Until next time.
And congratulations, Ian, for just being on The Family Guy. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean. I'm hanging on to the weight of my love. If I let go of it all, I could leave. But I know.
Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like, take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. It takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty.